There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Introducing Batiste Sweat-Activated and Touch-Activated Dry Shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste Dry Shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. How crazy is the December heat wave in much of America? Well, pretty out there. More than 5,000 daily local highs broken this month. 84 degrees in Daytona Beach. We know that's Florida, but this is December. From Portland, Oregon, to Providence, Rhode Island, to Minot, North Dakota, super highs all over the place. Plants and animals confused, humans wondering, what's up? This hour On Point, the winter heat wave, looking at its source and what it means for us and for nature. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on, what are you seeing in your backyard? Are you out shopping in your summer gear? Are you loving it? Are you spooked? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Tuesday, here's NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer talking about the past week's freakish weather. Snow in the west, so warm in the east and south.
This morning's commute in Colorado, a mess. Hundreds of flights canceled. And in Salt Lake City, more than 9 inches fell, more than all of last winter. In the east, the other extreme. Today, Boston warmer than Las Vegas, and New York milder than Phoenix.
If you're in the ski business in much of the country, you're in trouble. Here, TV8 last week, talking with one of the folks at Cannonsburg Ski and Ride, this West Michigan, saying the warm weather wreaking havoc on their business.
We get probably 50 calls a day asking if we're open, when we're going to open. And, you know, the thing that's tough is with weather like this, we don't even know when we're officially going to be able to start blowing snow.
And Sunday, north of Buffalo, NBC affiliate WGRZ spotted, get this, Santa Claus, all dressed up in red but enjoying the summer sports water skiing.
Warm enough to be out on the water. Our camera's catching Santa Claus. He was doing just that. Here's the guy out on the Niagara River today, the jolly old elf himself, spotted water skiing.
Santa Claus water skiing north of Buffalo. With us first today from Seattle is meteorologist Nicholas Bond, principal research scientist at the University of Washington's Joint Institute for the Study of the Atmosphere and Ocean, also teaches weather analysis and forecasting there. Nicholas, welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. Can you please first just sort of paint a map for us of where this warm weather is hitting?
Yeah, it's especially east of the Rockies. It's just kind of amazing. The December to date, the upper Midwest has been running 15 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. The northeastern U.S., only 10 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. And, of course, all the records being set. It's a kind of persistent and very strong flow from the southwest. Basically, the air is coming from the Gulf Coast, and I don't know if you can smell the magnolias there in New England. But
just about.
Yeah, that's where the air is coming from, and that's why it's so warm and toasty.
And, of course, even down in Tupelo, Mississippi, they're setting records. Cape Hatteras in North Carolina setting records, 78 and 73 degrees there. What is setting these high temps in motion in a month that, for meteorologists, we're in winter now? Maybe not formally, but your winter begins, what is December, January, February?
Well, yeah, December is the start of meteorological winter, and these are, of course, the shortest days of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. And it's just this very odd, persistent weather pattern that we've gotten into that has kind of locked in a very strong flow off the Pacific into the western U.S. and some copious rainfall in the northwest and snow in the Rockies. And then east of there, a very warm weather pattern.
What's behind this? Is this another face of El Nino we keep hearing about?
Well, yeah, I was afraid you'd ask that. To a certain extent, it's kind of just a random fluke. The weather can get into these patterns.
Mm-hmm.
El Nino does tend to make the northern tier of the states warmer than normal, but I don't think we can blame all of this, and maybe even most of this, on El Nino, just because it's so extreme. And, occasionally we get into these kind of persistent patterns. So last winter, of course, especially at the end, got into a pattern where it was really cold and snowy in New England.
Sure was.
This one, it does have our attention just because it's so extreme.
Now, last winter, eventually that Arctic vortex we heard about for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks sort of broke out and came down, enveloped a lot of the country. What's up with the Arctic vortex? Is it stuck at in the Arctic for some reason?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The cold air is basically bottled up in the Arctic. The polar vortex is strong, and in that case, it's kind of like a frisbee spinning fast. It's very kind of stable, and the cold air is just kind of stays up at high latitudes. And when it's weaker, then there's more of these cold air outbreaks to lower latitudes. And we just haven't seen that yet. It's one of those things. It does kind of alternate back and forth between that, but the way that for the last couple of months, it's just been so persistent is unusual.
Now, a lot we read about some kind of high pressure system from Greenland that normally pushes back from the east, I guess, against the east coast, and may hold some of this warmth and weather back. What about the pressure in Greenland? What's about the Atlantic side of the equation?
Yeah, it is a kind of hemispheric sort of situation. You can't just look at it in isolation, and that is certainly contributing. Just what's going on in the Atlantic to what we're seeing now, and not just up in Greenland, but what's happening kind of off the Gulf Coast, around Bermuda there, and partly why it's so warm in the southeast also.
Nicholas, how do you look at this? I mean, when we say records are broken, and they're being broken for highs and also for high lows, like the lowest temperature of the day in many places is also very high.
That's another tough question here. You're specializing in them today.
Trying.
A big question is, as the climate is evolving here, are we starting to see greater variability in the weather from kind of within seasons and from year to year? And that's a really tricky thing to establish. And it has our attention because, of course, in recent years we've had some extreme weather of other sorts. And is that becoming more prevalent or not? We can't say yet. I would point out that not that many years ago, in 2011, 2012, we had a very warm winter in the eastern U.S. and kind of some of the same weather. I know people were playing golf in New Jersey.
Yes, I remember, before the avalanche of snow came.
It was especially warm early in the winter. The whole winter was warm, too. But this is... this has our attention, and it's not necessarily something we can always, predict months ahead of time. But what we're trying to figure out is, how much of this has to do with climate change and how much is just kind of a fluke.
There's always fluctuation, as you say. On the other hand, when records fall, I mean, what, we've been keeping weather records for 150 years nearly.
Yeah. And what we're definitely seeing overall is a lot more high temperature records being set in recent years than low temperature records, and that as the baseline of the temperatures go up, that's something to be expected. But again, the kind of nuance there is there even more records than you would otherwise think being set, because for both people and for the forests and ecosystems and that sort of thing, in many cases it's these extremes that really are important.
Warmest November on record we heard. This December looks like it could go there as well. What's the forecast for next week as people go toward, I guess, what for many will not be a white Christmas?
Yeah, that's right. Temporarily, there's going to be a cool down for the Northeast U.S., but it looks like we're getting back into the same pattern. And so, yeah, again, the Christmas week looks pretty toasty for the Eastern U.S.
Suzanne in Aiken, South Carolina. What do you see down there, Suzanne?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Well, right now it's raining and but warm. But yesterday I was shopping in my flip-flops and it was 72 degrees. So it was fabulous for me.
Now, you're in South Carolina. That's not the Arctic. That's not the North Pole. But is that unusual for the middle of December?
Absolutely. I lived in Augusta, Georgia as well. If you don't remember, not too long ago, we had an ice storm. and it wasn't in December. It was in February, but it definitely was much colder. But I'm from upstate New York originally and raised in Miami, so I know all the...
You got the full range, Suzanne. Doing your shopping in flip-flops yesterday. That's the middle of December. Nicholas Bond, standby in Seattle. With us right now from New Orleans is Julia Kumari Dropkin. She's climate and weather journalist, executive producer, founder of the climate and news service I See Change. Julia, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You talk with people all over the country. They send you reports of what they see in their backyards. What kind of reports are you getting in this very warm December, Julia?
You know, people have been on red alert, high alert about weird changes kind of all year long. We've definitely been hearing about people in October and November, you know, being able to harvest their gardens and without any, you know, insulation, being able to get kale and those winter greens. And then people just saying, hey, I'm outside, I'm enjoying it, but it's a little bit weird. We've been getting crazy posts about bugs. Everyone has been noticing that there are more bugs, from ticks, deer ticks, to mosquitoes, to gnats,
I think
grasshoppers,
you had grasshoppers in Delaware. That one
yeah.
blew my mind in December.
Yeah, one of our reporters is going to be reporting that story out. So when people post on I See Change an observation about something that's weird, if they have a question, one of our reporters or producers goes ahead and investigates and says, okay, well, how weird is this? Is this related to today's weather? Is this part of a longer-term trend that we need to keep an eye on? I mean, if you think about it, we've been dealing with maybe perhaps greater weather variability. Everyone is just kind of sitting there in our daily lives saying, okay, is this the new norm? Is it me or is this climate change? Or is it just, you know, a fluke? So our network kind of has that conversation and we provide a place for people to chime in. Scientists and journalists vet the stories and we try and understand if this is part of a longer term trend.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about record high December temperatures in much of the country, looking at what's going on and the impact on us, on the economy, on nature. You can join us this hour. Have you had the super balmy December where you live? Have you been preparing for the holidays in a t-shirt and shorts? How warm has it been? How's it changed your December world, your backyard? Do you welcome it? Do you fear it? Nicholas Bond is with us, meteorologist at the University of Washington's Joint Institute for the Study of Atmosphere and the Ocean. Julia Kumari Dropkin is with us from New Orleans. She is founder and executive producer at I See Change. They take citizen observations on what's going on temperature-wise, nature-wise in their neck of the woods and look for explanations. They're launching an app with NASA soon to help that go even further. You can link to the website through ours, onpointradio.org. Here's the director of the National Weather Service, Louis Uccellini, on Monday, talking with NBC News about this year's weather and El Nino.
What we are seeing this year is a near record-setting El Nino pattern over the Pacific Ocean, which is transporting very warm air across the entire United States.
And what does that mean? Well, here's Kelly Shuttle. This is in DePere Hardware outside Green Bay, Wisconsin. Normally this time of year, snowblowers flying out. This year, post-hole diggers, sod cutters, warm weather stuff.
I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I have never seen a year like this one. We probably sold a couple of snowblowers in November. Typically, we would sell pretty much out of them in November and have to reorder. But it's just the weather is the weather. You can't change it. We've been renting out rental equipment this time of year. Typically, the ground is frozen. We've had postal diggers go out, sod cutters go out. Our trencher was out last Sunday.
A trencher. And here out of Allentown, Pennsylvania, from WFMZ-TV, reporter Kylie Gibbs talking with a hardware store owner who's selling not shovels, but gardening products in December.
We're selling GrubX products, topsoil. We had all of our mulch and stones are in.
While those aren't the typical products you would think would be flying off the shelves now at Albright's hardware store in South Whitehall, manager Griffin Daly says because of the unseasonably warm temperatures, there has been a lot of product shakeup happening at the store.
A pretty weird December. Julia, please stand by. And Nicholas, Richard Premack joins me right now in the studio, professor of biology at Boston University, studies ecology, phenology, the cycles of life in the plant and animal kingdom, disruptions in those cycles. Richard Premack, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
As a biologist, what are you seeing in this warm December that catches your eye?
Well, as I walk around Boston, it's very striking that I'm seeing plants like forsythia in flower and rhododendron in flower.
In December,
Just
crazy.
I'm actually even seeing some plants starting to produce new leaves, which is pretty exceptional.
I mean, we've got cherry blossoms out in Washington. We associate that with springtime. People are talking about daffodils coming up in December.
Well, I think that we have a lot of plants sprouting that would not be expecting. For example, people have put in garlic, and they expect to see the garlic sprouting next spring, but the garlic is already sprouting in people's gardens. So I think a lot of changes are happening because of this warm weather, and the plants can sense it.
Up and ready to go. You had a story out of Buffalo that caught my ear.
Well, that's right. I spoke to a colleague in Buffalo who told me that up until a week ago, he was still harvesting tomatoes from his garden. And this time last year in Buffalo, there was 7 feet of snow. So we've gone from an extreme cold and snowy winter to one which is record-breaking warm.
Buffalo just got walloped last year. New leaves, what, on trees? Shouldn't they be more or less sleeping this time of year?
Well, that's right. So this time of the year, the trees should be sleeping. But what happens is that plants also have a way of monitoring the temperature. And it's been so warm that many trees are actually fooled into thinking that spring has arrived and their flower buds are opening and even some of their leaf buds are opening.
Is this disruption of the cycle going to hurt plants, or it doesn't matter? They'll go to sleep later when things get cold and everything's fine, or what?
Well, for wild plants, it actually has a harmful effect because what happens is the flower buds that open now can form their fruits. So that means that next spring, these plants will have fewer flowers and have fewer fruits and seeds to produce their next generation.
What about animals?
Well, we're also seeing some very dramatic effects on animals. So one of the most incredible observations that I found was on the monarch listserv that people have actually been observing monarch butterflies in Vermont, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina.
In December.
So this time of year, the monarch should have either migrated further south or they should have died.
Presumably they will, because at some point the cold will come and they'll be trapped.
The ones that are there have died. Another incredible observation is in Saco, Maine, on a hillside, there's actually more than half a dozen species of warblers which have still remained behind. And it's so warm and there's such abundant insect life that these warblers have food and they haven't migrated south. And this is unprecedented.
Where would they normally be by this time of year?
Well, this time of year, they would be in the southeast United States or even in Central America.
What about animals that hibernate? Are they still hibernating or are they lumbering around?
Well, I think that animals are still active. So, for example, we have abundant squirrels in Massachusetts, and this time of the year, the squirrels would mostly be hibernating. But they have food to eat. There's abundant acorns, so they're out and they're still active.
If it stays warm longer when they do hibernate, does it matter? What's hibernation like in a warmish winter, certainly December anyway?
Well, if it stays warm and there isn't a lot of snow cover, what could happen is that these animals could go into hibernation, but they'll use up so much of their body fat sort of staying alive in these warmer conditions that they might actually run out of body fat and starve to death.
You mean because the cold would normally slow their metabolism down, but if it's not cold enough, that doesn't happen?
That's right. So actually, there's a couple of things could happen. One, if it stays warm and there's no snow, they will hibernate, but their metabolism will be higher, and they'll use up more energy staying alive. Another possibility—
If they're starving to death in hibernation, do they just starve to death in their sleep, or do they wake up ravenous and go out looking for food?
It could happen both ways. They could just be in hibernation, run out of body fat and die, or they could wake up hungry, go out in February, and there's nothing to eat and it's cold outside, and they could just die. Another possibility is that if it stays warm and there's no snow cover and then we have a cold snap, the cold could penetrate very, very deeply in the ground because there's no insulation of snow on the surface, and that could kill a lot of animals in the ground as well.
Richard Premack, that's a pretty wild lineup of stories right there on the biology front. And insects, Richard, they're also I've seen all kinds of bugs around.
Well, that's right. So we're also seeing records throughout the United States of mosquitoes still active, butterflies. We've actually set many butterfly records in New England. For example, red admirals are out in December now, whereas normally you'd never see them pretty much after November. So we're seeing a lot of records of insects all. And this has a lot of implications, especially for trees, because if there are insect pest populations, for example, bark beetles or emerald ash borers.
It's been a big deal in the Rockies. Sometimes.
Right. Then they're going to wind up building up populations in the spring and killing trees next year.
Peter's calling from Buffalo, where, as you say, they had 7 feet of snow this time last year. Peter, what do you see?
50 degrees and a little drizzle today, and this past week has been beautiful. We were mid-high 60s this weekend and playing golf.
Golfing where you had snow over your head a year ago, does it just feel like the regular cycle of weather to you, Peter, or something different?
No, I think this is definitely different. And we say it with a smile on our face. We enjoy the weather, but our big fear is that warm lake to our west, Lake Erie, that is not cooling off. And we know that winter is coming, and when it does come, the amount of snowfall that we will get because the lake hasn't froze over.
Ah, and do you have a question? Yeah, that's interesting. And a question for our panel, Peter?
Yes. With this extreme or warm weather that we're seeing here in the United States, do you see other extremes? Is there a cold dip someplace else in the world or in other regions? Are they seeing extreme cold temperatures?
Let us pick it up. Nicholas Bond, is that the way it works? If it's very warm in much of the U.S., does that mean it's colder somewhere else?
Sometimes that's the case and sometimes not. I realize that might not be an entirely satisfactory answer. The globe as a whole has been very warm this year. The El Nino that's present tends to mean a warmer world overall. And in general, when we had talked to, before about the polar vortex being strong and all that cold air, at least in the northern hemisphere, being bottled up in the Arctic. And so for the most part, it's been a warm winter. And you can find some exceptions, but at least in the northern hemisphere, it's unusual.
Terrence in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling, Terrence. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So, I don't understand why people freak out over these so-called weather phenomena. We've only had, 150 years of weather recording? This is probably something that happens every couple hundred years or so. It's just another phase of the Earth going that we're going to have to go through as a species.
150 years is a pretty long time, and I think most people just aren't used to being in short pants in a lot of places in December. But fair enough. I mean, Julia, how do you look at this? We all know that in the past 2 weeks it's been all about the Paris climate change talks and whether we can hold global warming to 3 or 4 or 5 degrees. Here we get these super high temperatures, as Nicholas was saying, 15 degrees above normal Fahrenheit in the upper Midwest, 10 further in the east. And some people look at it and say, big long cycles, no big deal. And others say, oh, my God, here comes the apocalypse.
Well, it is, the history of the Earth is long and our climate record is long and scientists have been able to say, okay, this is a very distinct period in which our global carbon levels are higher than they've been, for thousands and thousands of years. But if you want to just look at that 150-year record, okay, fine. We have come to expect weather and climate, and it's kind of, structured our daily lives and livelihoods, our festivals, our economies, what we've come to expect. And so regardless of whether you believe in climate change or not, our weather and our climate are changing. So how is that changing us? It has it. Every weather event reverberates from the local to the national throughout our economies, throughout our lives. So whether it's my child's, you know, birthday is, it used to be in the snow, but it's in the rain, or if I'm shopping in my, you know, my sandals, I'm not shopping for boots. If the growing season, for example, this year in particular, it's one of the longest growing seasons we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And that had a real impact on hay supplies and the price of milk. And so all of these things kind of compound and build, and people are uncomfortable. We are changing, and we're going to have to make adjustments in our lives. So it is a big deal. It is a big deal, whether or not you believe in climate change or not.
I want to get our biologist's view on that, but a call first, Adam in Strasburg, Virginia. Adam, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I am a beekeeper in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, and what I've observed with this unseasonably warm weather is that my bees are much more active this time mm-hmm. of year, where typically they would be formed in a tight cluster to stay warm. And the result of this is that they're eating more of their winter food supply more quickly that they would typically save for January, February, and March.
Are they actually flying around or just not as clustered up in the hive, Adam?
They are actually flying out and about, and I have observed some of them collecting pollen, which relates to earlier discussion about how some of the trees are in their off cycle right now.
Richard Premack, you're our biologist here. What do you make of that report on the bees in Virginia?
Well, I think we are seeing bees and insects showing unusual patterns. And this relates to a general question that with these unusual weather patterns, that some species will be able to take advantage of that and do better and become more common. And other species, often our particularly vulnerable species, our rare wildflowers, rare insects, actually don't do better with this kind of variation and will probably decline and go locally extinct.
Brian in Montreal. Let's go further north. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi. I wonder if we're going to have to buy a Major League Baseball franchise up here because our natural advantage in hockey is going to disappear this winter.
Yeah, where's the frozen pond?
Yeah, but to be more serious, I've spent a lot of my career building infrastructure all across Canada, and we're usually on the edge of that polar vortex. And when I've been designing power line, you know, transmission lines for electrical mm-hmm. power or bridges for roads and railroads, we depend on extrapolating from the 150-year record we've managed to collect using some statistical techniques, but it's an educated guess based on the fact that we've never detected any evidence that a whole bunch of the trees fell down in an ice storm. But because we really do depend on that very short record to make very multi-billion-dollar investments on essential infrastructure, I'm worried that my house roof might not, in this year or the next year, be able to handle the next extreme. And for Americans, let me just give one example. Quebec is a really big supplier of hydropower.
Yes.
In winter, we use it to heat almost all of our buildings. And then in the summer, since we don't heat that time of year, we ship that energy to the northeast of the United States for good prices, but it is way cheaper than gas, natural gas-fired power. If we suffer an ice storm and we lose one or two of our major power lines, it's not going to hurt us this winter. It'll take months to rebuild those lines, and the northeast just might be at a risk of being short of that emergency high-peak power that they depend on to keep your economy ticking over.
So to our caller, Brian, in Oshkosh, who's thinking, well, what's the big deal? Because, you know, there's variation over time. 150 years is a small snapshot. This is just the way life goes.
But it's not true up here. And for engineers, we do have to make a guess about the way things are based on all the evidence we have. And we haven't depended on this kind of extreme yet.
Brian, I appreciate your call from Montreal. Nicholas Bond, what are you thinking as you hear that engineer on the ground worrying about all the infrastructure of human life?
Well, I can sympathize there. Yeah, it's a big problem. And unfortunately, the kind of weather patterns we're in mean that an ice storm is possible in that region with the warm air aloft that could bring in kind of rain falling into colder air. One thing I would like to point out is, you know, this year is really a fluke. This isn't climate change that responsible for what's going on, but it's kind of the way I look at it is maybe a little bit of a dress rehearsal for the type of years that are going to be coming more common in future decades.
So it may be a fluke, but it may also be a taste of the future. Nicholas Bond in Seattle, a principal research scientist at the University of Washington's Joint Institute for the Study of the Atmosphere and Ocean. It's always great to have you with us, Nicholas. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Richard Premack, please stand by. Our biologist on the job here today, looking out at this super warm weather, not a white Christmas on its way. And Julia Kumari-Drapkin in New Orleans with I See Change. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about the record high December temperatures we're seeing in much of the country, 5,000 plus local records toppling in this month for warm weather. We're looking at what's going on and the impact on us, on the economy, on nature. Of course, it's all part of the same thing in the end. You can join us this hour. How warm has it been where you are? Has it changed your December world? Has it changed your backyard? Do you welcome it? Do you fear it? Is that concerned as part of something scary? Are you on the flip side of this story, buried deep and hard by winter already this year? How's the December weather hitting your life, your bottom line? Richard Premack is with us, professor of biology at Boston University, studies the cycles of ecology and cycles of life in the plant and animal kingdom, the disruption of those cycles. Julia Kumari-Drapkin is with us from New Orleans. She is climate and weather journalist, executive producer, founder of the climate and news service I See Change. They capture reports from citizens all over the country about what they're seeing in their backyard. You can link to all of that at our website, onpointradio.org. Julia, Richard, lots of listeners chipping in here. Sherry writes to us on Twitter, it's crazy hot here in Florida when it should not be. 83 in Daytona, we saw that record. And I know it's Florida, but this is December. Pamela says, here in Northeast Ohio, 35 miles from Lake Erie, we're still harvesting from the garden, and the cold frame has no cover. We've got Sandy Pujol Convalia. He says it's the same everywhere. 68 degrees in Barcelona, Spain. Should be much cooler, Sandy reports to us. And Hunter writes to us from Duluth, way up north, says, if we have a green Christmas in Duluth, I don't want to live on this planet anymore. NASA, I'm ready to go. Well, I want to live on this planet. So if we can possibly arrange that. Let's go to Bill in Wheatfield, New York. Bill, thanks for calling.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I just had a quick comment. You know, I'm between, like, Buffalo and Niagara Falls. You did have a caller from Buffalo, but, yes, last winter was so brutal. And just a few days ago, we broke our all-time high record. We had 71 here, and the last time it was 70 was in 1901.
Okay.
And I just had the comment. You were saying, well, how does your backyard look? And I've owned my home for 35 years, and this is the first time I've ever seen dandelions blooming in my backyard in December. And that was my comment.
Dandelions in December. Our biologist is kind of shaking his head here. Bill, I appreciate your call from New York. Let me get one more here from Faber, Virginia. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you see?
I see and hear lots of changes with the birds. I live on 5 acres on the side of a mountain, and I have a house friend who lives in a light above a light fixture out my back door.
Yeah,
a
wren, yeah.
She has at least 2 young in her nest.
So a nest with chicks in it in December. Baby birds.
Oh, man.
And I also have seen, I'm not sure when they were born, but I've seen really small baby type like chickadees at my feeder. They don't look, you know, they look like they were born, probably just started flying.
Richard Premack, Susan, thank you for that. That's fascinating. Richard, what do you think?
Well, I think this is also indicative of what could potentially be a disruption in some of the life cycles, because these baby birds are not going to survive during the wintertime. Once the weather does turn cold, they're just not going to be able to survive. And we're actually having a lot of reports now of frogs like spring peepers calling, doing their mating calls this time of the year. Also, a lot of people are reporting, again, spring calling of birds in December. And what this means is that these animals are putting a lot of energy into reproduction now, and it's not going to be successful, and these plants are going to have much less energy come the spring and will likely have a worse year next year because of it.
Shake it like a Polaroid picture in the wrong season. Barbara in Guilford, Vermont. Barbara, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a frog pond out beside my house, and my bullfrogs are out, like, right now.
Bullfrogs. This is all kind of blowing my mind. December bullfrogs. Not Bing Crosby singing White Christmas, but bullfrogs.
And I also have leaves growing off of my apple tree. My daylilies are starting to pop up, and I have a ton of mud in my yard. I was kind of hoping it would freeze up so I can get out of the mud. But, yeah, it's a crazy winter.
So are you freaked out or are you enjoying the second summer?
I love it. Bring it on.
Julia Barbara's up in Vermont where we think this time, you know, of sleigh bells ringing, and she's got daylilies. How's it line up with what you're hearing from your folks at IC Change, Julia?
Well, it's so interesting. And if you take January of last year, it was a flip reverse in terms of what we were seeing in the East Coast and the West Coast. We were hearing the same kinds of observations in the western half of the U.S. in January of 2015. Frogs were up and you know, croaking. We had birds up. We had early flowering. We had fruit trees flowering. Actually, it all started in the last week of January, where Amber Kleineman in western Colorado noticed her bees were buzzing. And she posted a picture on IC Change, and the entire community figured out what was pollinating, what they were feeding on. They were feeding on silver maple flowers. And those were blooming extraordinarily early. So we knew we had a really early spring. It set the stage for the entire growing season for 2015. So a lot of what we're seeing now is, you know, a lot of the seeds were planted earlier this year. So the early spring in the western half of the United States resulted in the far west, where they didn't get any rain. You know, we had droughts and wildfires and that kind of behavior in the ecology. And then in the central west, we had rain, but with the early growing season, we had, you know, hay supplies. People were able to garden longer than they ever have. Even in the western Colorado and the central states, people were still harvesting from their gardens just last month, and they just only finally got their first snows. And those snows came much later than usual.
I mean, those,
so
there can
across
be pleasure
the country,
in all
we're
that.
Seeing this.
There can be pleasure in all that. But you you've described
absolutely.
It as, you've described it, though, Julia, as ecological chaos.
Well, you know, we are part of the ecology too.
Yes.
So our rhythms have been thrown off. And with these kinds of changes, there's always winners and losers. So yeah, the skiing season's not so hot, but there are people reporting on IC Change that you can still surf off the coast of California because the water is so warm. Golfing, you know, people are still mowing their lawns, so the lawnmowers you know, have an extra little bump to their season. Hunting is really good right now in the Northeast because they had a bumper crop of acorns. And so tons of animals are out and well-fed, and the weather's warm, and people are enjoying it.
We will see where this goes. Julia, stand by, and Richard Premack with us right now from Cornwall, Pennsylvania, is Noel Perry, economist, partner at FTR. It's a transportation consulting firm. Looks especially at the transportation economy, but that touches a lot. Noel Perry, thank you very much for being with us today. What kind of impacts are you seeing, positive, negative, from this very warm December?
Hello, Tom. It's good to be back on your show again.
Great to have you.
Well, from an economic standpoint, there are two ways to look at this. It's clear, and we've heard about it over the last hour, that there's many changes in the mix of the economy. I'm playing golf. I'm not skiing. There's more shopping and more construction, and there's less fuel used. However, in order for this to be a big, noticeable macroeconomic deal, it has to be disruptive. It has to be spectacular. It has to be like 2 years ago in the winter when we had snow over two-thirds of the country for 2 months, or when Sandy hit and affected the entire eastern seaboard. And so far, this has been a very noticeable but a very gradual thing that simply is not affecting the economy as much as it's affecting nature.
You know, I disagree.
How so, Julia?
We've been seeing local economies impacted by very specific weather. So we have, for example, Nicholas Bond, who discovered the warm water off the coast of the West Coast, the blob.
Mm-hmm.
That's been upending marine ecosystems. That has really impacted fishermen and the fishing ecology over there. And so Dungeness crab, that's been shut down because there's been unusual algae blooms with the unusual warm water. We've seen fruit tree losses across the country this year because a lot of the fruit trees, and both in the Northeast and in the West, they bloomed early, and they got hit by these spring frosts and wiped out some of their crops. Again, hay prices were really low because there was an abundance of hay, and so that made its way to milk prices. Ranchers were able to keep more animals, they were able to produce more milk, and that sent prices, lower. And those all impact our macroeconomy in very specific ways. It's not like a Sandy where everyone just kind of focuses on this huge storm,
mm-hmm.
But it's still impacting daily life in America.
Noah Perry, I mean, your specialty is transportation economics. Transportation, surely, I guess, would be a net winner here because you just don't have roads blocked by all the normal effects of winter yet.
Well, let me say two things. First off, my comments are not meant to say that there aren't strong effects in local areas,
mm-hmm.
like the fishermen, like the beekeepers, like the snow, the ski slopes in Vermont. What I'm saying is, if you look at the economy as a whole,
mm-hmm.
these localized things don't add up to an effect like we had 2 years ago. Now, with respect to transportation, there are two ways to look at this. Clearly, this weather has improved the efficiency of our transportation network. Usually, air travelers are waiting in line in Newark and
yep.
Philadelphia and Chicago right now. Now they're on time. And the same with the trucks and the railroads. Railroads really slow down in the winter. They're
mm-hmm.
not this year. Now, having said that, if we measure the total amount spent on transportation, bad weather's good for us because we spend a lot more making up for the problem as we did 2 years ago than we do if we just sail through it. So in a sense, the spectacular bad weather that we sometimes have is actually good for the economy in the short term.
No, let me ask you, and I'll put this to Richard Premack as well on the biology front, but in terms of the economy, we understand, we've heard in this hour that there are winners and losers when you have a record-setting sort of out variable out like this December. We've also heard Nicholas Bond say maybe what we've got here is a taste of the future. If that's the case, and there are winners or losers if things warm, what about the net effect that you anticipate, Noel? Net effect, positive or negative, for the U.S. economy?
This is in the long term?
Yes.
We don't know. It's easy to see some places that will be hurt badly, like South Florida, that'll get flooded. But we simply don't know enough about the entire economy as it relates to weather and particularly about the exact effects of the of climate change. There are some people say that we'll get drought over the Midwest for extended periods. If that's true, then of course agriculture will be hit very badly.
That's a big question mark sitting there. We're looking at a warm December right now. Gary in New Albion, Iowa. Gary, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I worked in a Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources forestry nursery for 30 years, and at the end of that period, every year we would plant hundreds of thousands of acorns to produce oak trees for transplanting for reforestation. And there was years when those acorns would be getting messages that it was time to germinate too early in the spring, and once they germinated and started sprouting leaves, then we get cold weather waves again and freeze all of those trees. So we lost major amounts of our oak tree crop to that fluctuation in the cycle. And right now I'm sitting on the Mississippi River, upper Mississippi River, looking out across the wildlife refuge here and looking at tens of thousands of tundra swans loafing around on the open Mississippi River. These swans should have been on the East Coast wintering, preparing to spend the winter on their traditional winter grounds on the East Coast. So just all kinds of odd things happening that I haven't observed before.
Gary, I really appreciate that call, especially that view, looking out across the Mississippi and tens of thousands of tundra swans under your observant eye right now. Richard Premack, that brings me to you on this question. You too said that winners and losers in the realm of biology. But the net effect, if Nicholas Bond is right, and perhaps what we're feeling here is a taste of the future, what net effect?
Well, I think one area which is particularly serious is thinking about the impact on forestry and tree growth, because a lot of our trees are long-lived and they're planted in particular places to take advantage of a certain mix of temperature
and
precipitation.
Thrive. Mm-hmm.
And if the conditions get more variable, if the conditions get warmer in places or drier in places, I mean, a lot of trees could be dying across large areas of the United States and really having very severe impacts on the forestry economy and also on the water that these forests produce. And this is a very serious consequence for the economy of many places in the United States.
Julia Kamari-Drupkin, last year it wasn't as warm, but we had a fairly warm November, some pretty warm days in December, and then, boom, the deep freeze, or snow anyway, came down. I mean, maybe in a couple of months we'll be buried in snow and all this will be forgotten.
That's what happens is, you know, we kind of reel from extreme year to extreme year, and our memories are really good, or at least mine is, about handling, okay, this happened last year and this is happening this year. But in order to keep track of those, you know, weird weather events and how they're impacting us over time, we have a harder time, you know, figuring out what it was like 4 years ago. So I See Change is dedicated to providing a community resource for people to post what they're seeing change, how those changes are impacting their lives, and creating a record that they can refer to in the past. So, you know, this last summer we had drought-stressed trees along the Northeast coast. We had a bumper crop in acorns, as someone was just remarking about acorns. In the future years, people are going to be able to enjoy looking back on those observations and putting the pieces together. Oh, yes, this is starting to shape up like this last year. You know, this year is just like 1997. Mm. We're going to create that long-term record so people can navigate the changes as they continue to come at us.
Listeners, you can check that out. You can link to it through our website, onpointradio.org. It's called I See Change, and it's a way you can also chip into our understanding. Julia Kamari-Drupkin at I See Change with us today from New Orleans. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Noel Perry at FTR in Cornwall, Pennsylvania. Thank you, Noel.
Thank you, Tom.
And Richard Premack, professor of biology at Boston University. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
A warm December right now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.